Westmeath author Patricia Gibney's novels about Garda detective Lottie Parker have sold more than a million copies. No Safe Place, the fourth in the series, has just been published in paperback by Sphere. Patricia Gibney is with me in studio now. I read somewhere, Patricia, that you had said that the books for the Lottie Parker books often start with a murder for you. That's the starting point, and then you work back from there.
Yeah.
There's a pretty horrific murder, very dramatic opening scene to this book. Was that the starting point? Tell us what the opening scene is and then tell me, was it the starting point?
Yeah, I always start with a body because there has to be a murder and a mystery and a crime to solve. And I wrote I nearly always write the prologue first. Mm. And if I haven't written a prologue before I start, no prologue goes into the book. And in No Safe Place, we start off in a graveyard in the dead of night, and there's a girl who is running for her life, and we know that there's somebody, you know, she can feel the breath on the back of her neck, there's somebody running after her, and not giving away any spoilers or anything, but she falls into an open grave and fears that she is going to die in somebody else's grave as the clay starts coming down on top of her head.
All right, yeah. So that's a pretty dramatic opening. And of course, I suppose as the author then, what you have to start doing is you have to start teasing out, who is this woman who's chasing her? You know, why is this all happening? And I guess that's the starting point. Scene must have been the starting point for No Safe Place.
That was the starting point. And then I have to figure out, who is this girl? Why would somebody want to kill her? Why was she in the graveyard running for her life at 3 o'clock in the morning? And from that, then you build up her family and the different characters and the suspects. And I always write intricate plots and subplots, so then you bring in all the other characters.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, which means that discussing it is a minefield of potential spoilers, and also can become very confusing. But one thing that I think is very interesting, as in it can become confusing for people who haven't read the book if you start talking about characters in it, but No Safe Place, that as a title, I mean, we are what should be a safe place in the case of Ragmullen, which is where these novels are set.
Yes.
It's an ordinary Irish town.
Yes.
I mean, are the ordinary Irish towns in Westmeath a bit more dangerous than the ordinary Irish towns anywhere else? Because Ragmullen, certainly in this book, even though on the surface it's a very safe place, there's an awful lot going on underneath.
There is a lot going on, and I think in the course of my books, at this stage I don't know how many murders have happened, but in my own hometown, which is in the Midlands of Ireland, I think it could be 25 years since there was actually a murder in it. And I love, like, when you say, like, we live in a safe place, but is it really safe? You know, like, you know, what's going through people's heads as they walk along the street, or your neighbours, or, you know, like, a crime can happen anywhere. And I think the fascination with, like, a small Midlands town in Ireland is you think, it could never happen there, you know. So I think as an author, and, you know, using my imagination and the creativity, I try to bring that fear into the reader that this really could happen next door to me.
Do you spend much time on trains?
Not really, no.
Because there's an opening section, it was quite early on in the novel, where we have two women on a train, and even though we don't even get to hear about who the person watching them is, but there is a man watching them.
Yes.
And it's a very creepy type of watching that's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, have you sat on trains and looked around and said, I wonder what he's doing there and who's she?
Oh, well, I do people watch. Yeah, but I think where that came from, and it's probably a book that I will write at some stage, but I was in New York some years ago and I had to meet a relation of mine, and they told me the train to get on the underground, and I got on the wrong train. And I said, I'm going to call the book The Girl on the Wrong Train. But I ended up...
And then somebody else did it, but took out the word wrong.
Wrong, yeah. But it was so terrifying. I ended up in a place which a detective friend of mine in New York told me afterwards to call the Killing Corner. So that was kind of in my head when I was writing this. And I do people watch, whether I'm just sitting in a doctor's surgery or if I am on a train. And you are wondering, like, you know, why is that people that person eating that kind of sandwich, or you know, what's in their briefcase, or you know what I mean, and like who is their family? So I'm the whole time being inquisitive within my mind, and try to bring that then into the books.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to give too much away, but somebody goes missing, you know, and that is what brings Lottie into the scenario, really.
Yes.
Well, there's the body from the first scene, and then there's this, the missing person aspect of it kind of starts to seep in as the novel proceeds. Tell me a little bit about Lottie. She's been through a lot, it has to be said, in the first few books, and there's quite a lot going on in book number four as well.
Yeah, she's developing as a character, and good things happen to her and bad things happen to her, and she has a lot to deal with. And Lottie is a widow of about 3 years in the first book, and which was The Missing Ones, and I think it might be about 4 years in No Safe Place. And she has three teenage children, and they are up to all sorts, and she is grieving but doesn't realise she's grieving, and they're grieving and she doesn't know how to handle them. And she has a mother who tries to help her, but Lottie doesn't want the help. And then she has kind of an on-off relationship then with one of her detectives, Detective Mark Boyd, and everybody just keeps throwing spanners in the works. And then she gets these horrible cases that she has to try and deal with, as well as keeping the show on the road with the family as well.
And I mean, many people, I was checked with you before we started this evening, when was it that you did that interview with Ryan Troverty? I remember I happened to be at, I think I was on a week's holidays at the time, and I was travelling up the country in the car, and this interview with Patricia Gimney came on with Ryan in the morning, and you spoke all about your own husband Aidan, who died very suddenly. Well, relatively, you knew he was ill, but it happened very quickly.
Yeah, he died within 3 months of being diagnosed with cancer, being, you know, before that having been a strong, fit, healthy sergeant in the army. And it was devastating to us as a family. And like, I suppose in the beginning, the first couple of books, I kind of based Lottie Parker on what I was going through myself. So I think a lot of people say that Lottie is, they can relate to her and her struggles, and she's very real, because I poured a lot of what I was going through into the character of Lottie. And I think I've kind of come out the other side of it. I'm not sure she has.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Because I wonder to what extent, you know, can you put Lottie into situations, I suppose, almost safely, in that, you know, there will be no emotional fallout in the, because she's a fictional character.
Yes.
You know, so you can put her through, almost test the waters for yourself. Can you put her doing things that you're not ready to do or you don't want to do just yet?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm not a detective and I don't have to deal with grisly murders like that. But as a person, and dealing with her family and her relations and her relationships, I can push her so far and think, I wonder if I did that. How would that turn out?
Well, there was one particular aspect of that I thought was interesting. What ages, if you don't mind my asking, are your children now?
My children now are in their 20s.
Yeah. So Lottie is dealing with particularly the older child in the family. She's dealing with
Katie is 20.
Dealing with Katie, and again, we don't have to go into the whys and wherefores of any of this, but Katie's beginning to think, you know, time for me to move on, time for you to get away from home, and there's ways of her doing that. You can put Lottie through all of that and put Lottie through all of those wrenching emotions. Is it a way of doing it for yourself?
Yeah, I think it's a way of kind of exercising your mind of horrible things that you think could happen. And you write it down the page and you say, well, then that's never going to happen. You know?
But at the same time, I mean, what happens in this case is, you know, we have a child moving away from home. Mm. That probably is going to happen.
Well, it is, because one of my daughters spent 2 years in Australia and she's home now and has two children of her own. And my son in July, Carl, is going to Canada. And it's only me and Cottle at home now. So that's going to be like gut wrenching for me to be.
Yeah. Well, that's what I wondered. Were you kind of giving yourself a little bit of advanced therapy?
Yeah.
By giving Katie in the book, but letting her kind of fly the coop, if you like.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah. So it's like a lot of, real things that happen I can put into the book, and then a lot of fictional stuff, and develop something that was a small idea or a small little story and develop it into a totally mad fictional thing.
How much have you enjoyed developing the character of Mark Boyd?
Yeah, I love Mark. I wonder, is there a real
I was
going to
say,
Mark,
it'd be a great fella if you could find him.
I know, I'd love to find him. He's just so nice. He's like, he's one of these guys that would open the door for you and pull out the chair for you, and he's just so nice. And I really do test him, you know, and Lottie tests him.
Well, you said
say.
It, not me.
And he's, and I at the beginning, like in my first book, I was actually going to kill him off.
He's Lottie's, which we should explain, he's Lottie's colleague.
Psychic, yeah, psychic. And somebody, a friend of mine said to me, Niamh said to me, oh my God, you can't kill off Boyd. And it was the best bit of advice I ever got, because he has just really come into his own in the books.
Are there elements of your husband Aidan in Mark?
Yeah, I suppose, like, I mean, I have the fictional Adam who has died.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about him too. Yeah,
and he's just like a ghost in the story, and there's certain parts where he comes into it, like she'd look at a picture or feel his jumper or, you know, and try to get the smell of him back, you know. But in writing Mark Boyd, I suppose I would have a lot of Aidan's characteristics
him. Aidan was the man who would open the door and do all of those things for you.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you bring up that, and I'm not going to say what the relationship is developing between Lottie and Mark, but read the book if you want to find out what's happening on that front. The Adam character is mentioned a couple of times, but it's kind of fleeting not quite in passing, but it's just gently touched against. Is it a way of for you to write about Aidan without having to say, this is Aidan?
Yeah, I think, like, in The Missing Ones in the first book, I have Aidan's fishing jumper at home that my sister actually knitted for him, and I still have it. And
I know you spoke with Ryan about the clothes and the wardrobe, uniform.
Yeah, that's there. But the thing about the fishing jumper, I actually brought that into the story, you know, and it gives the reality of the feelings of, you know, I suppose grieving. I hate using that word, but it is, you know, grieving and missing somebody, and to be able to have something tangible. So I have fleeting little references within the stories.
You also treat you're very interesting characters from the travelling community here. Yeah. Is it Bridie, isn't it?
Bridie McWard
and her husband, Paddy.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going for something specific in your treatment of those two characters?
Well, I think in my hometown, we have a large travelling community. We have brought John Evan, who's an Olympic boxer, whose relatives and families would have come from the settled travelling community. And the real reason that it started was because the travelling accommodation houses are right beside the graveyard in my hometown. And then I started to think, well, they needed a voice and to bring a little bit of their culture and their heritage and kind of, you know, the thing about the banshees and the tether rings and stuff like that. So I kind of thought I might just give them a little a voice in the story.
And was there a sense in which you wanted to present, because they're quite sympathetic characters, both Brady and Paddy, was there a sense in which you wanted to present members of the travelling community in that sympathetic way, in a way perhaps they're not often represented in Irish literature?
Yeah, and you can see some places where the prejudice comes out in some of the other characters in relation to them. So I was just trying to just make it real.
Yeah.
You know, and they're the nicest people you could meet, and friends like played hurling with my son and that as well, you know, so it's real people. It's not to try and think of them as, you know, somebody else, and just to try and make them real people and part of the community. And that's what I was trying to do with No Safe Place.
I've spoken about a million copies of your books being sold, mostly as e-books. Can you read it from a Kindle yourself, I think, or did?
I go between both, but
How different is it to see the actual paperback in your hand, as you have done for the previous, because they've been published quite quickly.
Yeah, two a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Like the last January, 12 months when The Missing Ones came out, and to walk into the bookshop and look up at the shelf and see it, and I nearly have to pinch myself and say, is that my book? You know, is it really my book?
Where do you appear alphabetically? Have you looked at that yet?
I'm beside Robert Galbraith, who's J.K. Rowling.
That's a great spot to be.
I think near enough to John Grisham.
That's not a bad spot.
Yeah, in with the G's anyhow.
That's not a bad spot to be.
You're just at eye level in a lot of the bookshops.
And I noticed too, on the inside of Safe Place, we see, well, I've said that it's book number 4. We see Tell Nobody, which is obviously book 5 in the sequence.
That's
is book
right.
5 already done and dusted?
Book 5 and book 6 are done and dusted, and I've just handed in book 7.
All right.
Yeah.
And it's still 2 a year then? Are you writing at that rate?
Yeah, I'm two a year. Yeah.
Right. Well, better.
It's hard work, but it's doing work that I like doing.
Yeah. Well, it sounds as if you do. You better let you get home and get started again on books now, 8, 9, and 10. That's
exactly.
Patricia Gibney speaking to us about the latest of the Lottie Parker thrillers. It's called No Safe Place, published in paperback by Sphere.